Letters from around the world kept coming to Maury, thanks to the Nightline appearances. He would sit when he was up to it and dictate the responses to friends and family who gathered for their letter-writing sessions. One Sunday, when his sons Rob and John were home, they all gathered in the living room. Maury sat in his wheelchair, his skinny legs under a blanket. When he got cold, one of his helpers draped a nylon jacket over his shoulders. "What's the first letter?" Maury said. A colleague read a note from a woman named Nancy, who had lost her mother to ALS. She wrote to say how much she had suffered through the loss, and how she knew that Maury must be suffering, too. "All right," Maury said when the reading was completed. He shut his eyes. "Let's start by saying, Dear Nancy, you touched me very much with your story about your mother, and I understand what you went through. There is sadness and suffering on both parts. Grieving has been good for me, and I hope it has been good for you also." Rob, his son, said, "You might want to change that last line, Dad." Maury thought for a second and said, "You're right. How about, I hope you can find the healing power in grieving." "Is that better?" Rob nodded. "And add thank you, Maury," Maury said. Another letter was read from a woman named Jane, who was thanking him for his inspiration on the Nightline program. She referred to him as a prophet. "That's a high compliment," said a colleague. "A prophet." Maury made a face. He obviously didn't agree with the assessment. "Let's thank her for her high praise," Maury said, "and tell her I'm glad my words meant something to her. And don't forget to sign, Thank You, Maury." There was a letter from a man in England who had lost his mother and asked Maury to help him contact her through the spiritual world. There was a letter from a couple who wanted to drive to Boston to meet him. There was a long letter from a former graduate student who wrote about her life after the university. It told of a murder-suicide and 3 stillborn births. It told of a mother who died from ALS. It expressed fear that she, the daughter, would also contract the disease. It went on and on, 2 pages, 3 pages, 4 pages. Maury sat through the long, grim tale. When it was finally finished, he said softly, "Well, what do we answer?" The group was quiet. Finally, Rob said, "How about thanks for your long letter?" Everyone laughed, and Maury looked at his son and beamed. The newspaper near his chair has a photo of a Boston baseball player who is smiling after pitching a shutout. Of all the diseases, I think to myself, Maury gets one named after an athlete. "You remember Lou Gehrig?" I ask. "I remember him in the stadium saying goodbye," Maury says. "So you remember the famous line?" "Which one?" "Come on," I say, "Lou Gehrig, pride of the Yankees, the speech that echoes over the loudspeakers." "Remind me," Maury says, "do the speech." Through the open window, I hear the sound of a garbage truck. Although it's hot, Maury is wearing long sleeves with a blanket over his legs, his skin pale. The disease owns him. I raise my voice and do the Gehrig imitation, where the words bounce off the stadium walls. "Today, I feel like, the luckiest man, on the face of the earth." Maury closes his eyes and nods slowly. "Yeah, well, I didn't say that." The fifth Tuesday, we talk about family. It was the first week in September, back to school week, and after 35 consecutive autumns, my old professor did not have a class waiting for him on a college campus. Boston was teeming with students, double parked on side streets, unloading trunks, and here was Maury in his study. It seemed wrong, like those football players who finally retire and have to face that first Sunday at home watching on TV thinking, "I could still do that." I've learned from dealing with those players that it's best to leave them alone when their old seasons come around. Don't say anything. But then, I didn't need to remind Maury of his dwindling time. For our tape conversations, we had switched from handheld microphones, because it was too difficult now for Maury to hold anything that long, and now we use lavalier kind, popular with TV news people. You can clip these onto a collar or a lapel. Of course, since Maury only wore soft cotton shirts that hung loosely on his ever-shrinking frame, the microphone sagged and flopped, and I had to reach over and adjust it frequently. Maury seemed to enjoy this because it brought me closer to him, in hugging range, and his need for physical affection was stronger than ever. When I leaned in, I heard his wheezing breath and his weak coughing, and he smacked his lips softly before he swallowed. "Well, my friend," he said, "what are we talking about today?" "How about family?" I said. "Family." He mulled it over for a moment. "Well, you see mine all around me." He nodded to photos on his bookshelves of Maury as a child with his grandmother, Maury is a young man with his brother David, Maury with his wife Charlotte, Maury with his 2 sons, Rob, a journalist in Tokyo, and John, a computer expert in Boston. "I think," Maury said, "in light of what we've been talking about all these weeks, family becomes even more important. The fact is, there is no foundation, no secure ground upon which people may stand today if it isn't the family. It's become quite clear to me, as I've been sick, if you don't have the support and love and caring and concern that you get from a family, you don't have much at all. Love is so supremely important. As our great poet Alden said, love each other or perish.